Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome to the Cookbook Circle podcast. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Victoria.
And we've set out to review the UK's most popular cookbooks, those that you probably have at home and haven't opened in a while. We take one cookbook each episode to cook from and to stress test, digging out their best recipes, bringing them to life again, and hopefully inspiring you to do so too.
Hi, Hannah.
Hi, Victoria.
We're back, baby.
Oh, it feels like a while, doesn't it?
It does.
It's weird.
Lovely to meet you here under the virtual mistletoe.
What a line. Have you ever actually seen mistletoe in real life anywhere?
Not in like a way that I would use it, I was going to say. I feel like growing up in the middle England, growing up in middle England, like, you don't go to a lot of like holiday parties or like things like that where there'll be like mistletoe. I'm like, oh my god, the hunk. What I'm saying is Christmas films are a lie.
Yeah, I feel like I've spent 33 years looking for a mistletoe at parties to conveniently stand under, and it still hasn't worked out. Might need a new tactic.
But like, you know, I've seen people wear like those headbands with it on at like work Christmas parties, but they're the kind of people that you'd avoid. That's the
sexual pervert. Yeah. Sexual perverts.
As opposed to the regular kind.
I wanted to say sexual pest, but sexual pervert does the job as well.
Maybe mistletoe's the real sexual pest. Anyway, it's our Christmas episode.
It is our Christmas episode, and we're going to do things a little bit differently.
I wish I had bells. I want to ring little jingle bells.
Well, you did have that cat toy yesterday.
Oh my god, it's here.
Off you pop there then. Go on.
That's my cat. She's going to be outside the door like...
But. I don't
transition
even...
time.
I don't even do it on purpose. It just comes so naturally now.
We have a little bit of a different setup today because we are... That was very serious by me.
Yeah.
Listen. So instead of focusing on one book for Christmas, we chose a book each based on cool upcoming Christmas trends in Hannah's case and books that came out this year. And in my case, a kind of older, very, very well loved Christmas book, Christmas cookbook that I already have. I'm not going to sit here and go through The Night Before Christmas with you guys.
I would listen to that. Actually.
I'll record it for you. Right. And so we've both cooked from different books, and we're going to share our findings with you separately. And then very kindly, you guys who follow us on Instagram also gave us some lovely suggestions of what we should be eating and cooking and what books we should be reading For Christmas. We're going to share some of those so that you get the love as well.
There's a lot of your mate Jamie in there, actually, isn't there?
There is. You're busy. He has a Christmas book.
Of course he does.
It's not the one I cook from. And then, yeah, we'll share a bit of insight into our Christmases, past and present, and what we love, future.
Ghost of Christmas future.
The turkey of Christmas future. Go on then.
Should I go first?
Yeah, take it away.
So the book that I went with, I've been seeing online lots of teasers for it over the last few months, and I was really, really excited because it just looks beautiful. The cover is really gorgeous. And it's Anya Dunk, Advent.
Love it.
It's just gorgeous.
It's so beautiful.
It's called Advent, Festive German Bakes to Celebrate the Coming of Christmas.
Love it.
And it's got this really lovely, like, green cloth cover with gold text. It's just beautiful. It's just really, really festive feeling. I'll tell you a little bit about Anya first, because it's not that, it's not a huge amount about her online. I feel like she's a very wholesome person. I feel like she might be maybe the polar opposite of me, in that she seems very calm and organized and wholesome and basically has her shit together, quite cultured. She grew up in Wales. Her dad is Welsh and her mum is German.
Oh.
And her dad was, I think, an agricultural engineer or something. And they lived for periods in like Cameroon and Indonesia and Malaysia. Yeah, this is where the culture comes in. But they always had holidays in Germany, I guess, with her mum's family. And then she went on to study Mandarin, and she worked in like art galleries and worked in fashion. And then it says that she kind of like fell into cooking for people at a deli in Wales and just really enjoyed it, and then started cooking, kind of scaling up what she was doing in the deli to work for weddings, to cater for weddings. And then it's just basically been that since then. She's written for The Guardian. She's written for a few other food publications. She has a couple of books already. She had one on preserves. I think it was called Do Preserve.
Oh.
I think that was her first one. And then in 2018, she had one on modern German cooking called Strudel, Noodles and Dumplings.
Oh, I think I might have seen that one.
Yeah, it pops up on some lists. In fact, it might be in our big list.
Because, oh, really?
That whole book, the basis of it was that there's more to German cooking than like bratwurst and sauerkraut.
Yeah.
Like we kind of generalize, and I think people can be a bit dismissive of German cooking. And I haven't seen it, but the reviews of that book just look really, really good. I think it's just kind of a similar ethos to this one, in that's quite like, I mean, someone said the word frugal, which I feel has negative connotations, and that's probably not fair, but it's really simple and adaptable recipes, and like no crazy, you know, Thomas Keller share, right? Like no caviar or truffles or anything like that. It's all just homely and doable. Yeah, and that's the case for this book as well.
I was interested to see if it was simple, this book, like, because, you know, basically German words aren't simple. they don't look simple, so it all seems quite complicated, and I imagine a lot of like almond paste and you know, things like that. So I'm glad to hear that it's
what they lack in simplicity and vocabulary, they make up for in baking recipes, basically. like I said, this book is really visually beautiful, and she's got like lovely bits at the start about like her traditions on Christmas Eve and in the run-up, and like how everyone bakes loads around Christmas, and they have this plate called like a Bunterteller, you know, loads of different biscuits on a different plate. And then as you go through the book, she'll be like, this is a great one for your Bunterteller, or this one I wouldn't do for that. And it's just so traditional.
That's great.
She wrote it during lockdown, I think. So she did all the recipe testing and stuff herself, but also all the photography herself. And it looks so good. And then she, throughout the book and like each of the chapters, it's kind of divided up into different chapters, like spiced biscuits and chocolate biscuits and things like that. And each nut biscuits, each of those has like a little lino drawing across from it, or a lino cut. And she did those herself as well.
She's incredibly talented, is what you're telling us.
Oh, God. Just people like that. Just like give us a give the rest of us like a fucking break. It's not fair.
I'm happy for her that it's had such an impact, and or, you know, a PR push, or however it's got so popular. It's kind of, it's seemingly everywhere. And I don't know if that's because that rarely happens for a Christmas book. Like,
yeah.
or whether it, you know, it's just a PR thing, but it does really happen for a Christmas book. Like, it feels like every, when I was looking into this episode, I feel like every kind of big chef that you can think of, particularly in the UK, like, has a Christmas book, but generally they're not well regarded apart from a few of them, what we'll maybe talk about later. But yeah, this one, I guess, because it's just a bit different and a bit, yeah. And everybody knows about German sweets at Christmas, yes. You know?
Yeah, and I think you often just get them at like Christmas markets and stuff like that, don't you? I think that part of that is down to just how authentic it is. It's not like trendy. It's not fucking keto recipes for Christmas or something. It's like, it's really, really authentic and not up itself in any way. So I guess just because it's so true to, or at least I can say as a non-German person, it seems so true to the traditions and the recipes there that I think that's why it has such a buzz about it, because it's like proper. That makes
yeah.
sense.
And I guess it's very Christmassy, right? Like that can be the problem with Christmas books, is that like there's not that much, you know, what are you doing? You're making a cookie spiced with, you know, cinnamon. Oh, that's Christmassy. Like there's only so many places you can go after you've done like the classic 10 yeah. or so recipes that everybody wants to know. So yeah, it's different yeah. filler books, but that seems like, yeah, just a bit different, a bit authentic, you know, something to learn about, I guess.
Yeah, totally. She has Christmas drinks in here as well, which I really like.
Love that.
She's got mulled wine, like a very simple recipe, and a non-alcoholic punch, and a Christmas schnapps.
Ooh.
Which she says that is the perfect pick-me-up. I keep a bottle of it in the fridge door and enjoy it like a sort of espresso. Or mixed with milk or fresh orange juice. I mean, I think calling it an espresso is basically a shot. But, you know, you do you.
Yeah. You can drink it at 9 a.m. in December yeah, yeah. because it's Christmas, baby.
Yeah. Every time she goes to the fridge, just like a little pick-me-up. There's also this fire tongs punch, which looks really cool. I really wanted to make it, actually. It's this big bowl of punch and you kind of melt sugar over it then. Oh. And then it sits in like a bowl over a candle to like keep warm. It looks like a great centerpiece at a party.
Yeah, that sounds great.
It's got red wine and it's got some rum in it too. And it just looks, it's just a great book.
Also, Anya Dunk is a great name. Can I just say, I just want to put that on the record. It's like such a great name.
I know. Yeah. Her career could have been in basketball, but you know.
I bet she doesn't get that often.
I like about this book is that you might look at it and think it's all going to be sweet things, but actually there's tons of savory stuff in here, which I love. She has like a chapter on Advent breakfast.
Love that.
Muesli breakfast rolls, seeded rye rolls. These ones I really wanted to make, cheese and poppy seed rolls.
Uh-huh.
Just lots of rolls. But there's also,
this rolling.
Dunkin'. Yeah, it's got a good variety. It's not like tons and tons of cinnamon biscuits, basically.
Love that.
Yeah, so shall I tell you what I cooked?
Please, I'm excited to hear.
Well, you know how I'm really international?
I'm aware.
Yeah. I was in Seville for part of like prepping for this podcast, and I was staying with my sister and her husband, and I brought this over. So the first thing, they're not like, my brother-in-law especially is not like very sweet tooth.
That's like, not, you know, she's not very sweet. Like, wow, where to fuck your brother-in-law up on this?
Sorry, Carla. He doesn't listen anyway. He just doesn't really have a sweet tooth. So I was kind of doubting what to make there. So that I'm going to whiz through the first one because it doesn't feel very Christmassy, but it does feel very German. And it's called the Flammkuchen. Flammkuchen.
Okay, yeah. I don't speak German. I can't help.
It's like a very thin pizza.
Oh.
And I've eaten it before. And it's a very, very like crispy little base. Very thin. And in this recipe, it's topped with creme fraiche and onions and mushrooms and thyme. You make the dough on the spot, basically. Yeah, the dough itself is just like really super simple. It's plain flour, a little bit of oil and water. And you literally put the oven on, make that dough, just mix everything together. And then you divide it in half and you roll it out on a floured surface into like, again, this is, she's not very like, it has to be this way. She's like, I aim for an oval, but you know, whatever you want, as long as it fits on the baking sheet, that's fine. By the way, when you put the oven on, you put like a baking sheet in the oven to make sure it's really hot and you get a crispy base. And then you just work really quickly and you put the dough on this hot baking sheet and then you spread on, oh no, it's sour cream, not creme fraiche. And then you scatter on the onion and the mushrooms and a little bit of salt and the oil. And then you just bake it for like 15 minutes.
And nice.
The edges all crisp up and go brown. And then because the onions and mushrooms don't have like a huge amount of time to cook, it feels very fresh and just like...
So they're just raw? Like you haven't cooked those up in any oil or anything?
No,
like
literally just, going on raw, chopped. When it comes out of the oven, you sprinkle on the thyme and yeah, you slice it up. I couldn't actually find... This is the point about cooking in Spain for two of these recipes is that like, of course they don't have some of the things that we're going to have. I couldn't find sour cream anywhere. I think I was texting you, wasn't I? I was like
traipsing around
from shop to shop. And I ended up going with this thing called queso fresco batido, which is like a whipped fresh cheese kind of thing, but like a very mild one, and that worked perfectly. But yeah, it was really, it's like a very, very thin pizza, quite a fresh topping, no tomato obviously because you've got that kind of sour cream. I think it's just a great like quick dinner or a quick lunch.
It feels like it could be like a nice little starter if you're having people over, or like, you know, like a little hors d'oeuvre.
Yes, I think the traditional one is from Alsace. This was a fun little fact, actually, that it was invented by bakers to test the temperature of the oven.
Oh.
So if the oven was hot enough for bread, then this would only take a minute to cook. And then so they would just use it as a little like guinea pig, basically. But she suggests other kind of variations on it where you can replace the mushrooms with bacon or Schinken, as apparently it's called in German. God, German is so fun, isn't it? Schinken.
I mean, yeah.
Or goat's cheese and honey, pesto and tomato, red pepper and black olive. So she suggests loads of alternatives. And it's great.
Great option for your like pizza oven if you had one in the winter, like fire that up, make something like this, it'd be so good.
Yeah, it would be perfect. And I think like she does kind of say if you have a pizza stone or something to use that instead of the baking sheets in the oven, but the baking sheet worked fine.
Amazing, that sounds great. I would eat that.
Yeah, it was really good, but just not very Christmassy, which is why I'm not going to talk about it lots, but it is in there, so you know, whatever. And then the second thing that I made was the Florentines.
Oh, if I know anything about you, it's that you love a Florentine.
I love a Florentine. I think it's something about like how they're a little bit salt, like if you can, like you sprinkle salt on and they've got the nuts and stuff and they just don't feel overly sweet. It's often like dark chocolate on there. Because you got me Nadia Hussein's book, right? Nadia Biggs. And the first thing I made from that was the Florentines because I saw her making them. And we just kept them in the fridge. And it's just like, they're just such a good little snack to have. Yeah. I love them.
Like a little protein bar, but like it feels like a treat.
Yeah.
And they're better if you make them, right? I feel like if you buy them from the shop, they're always way too sweet, too like chewy.
Yeah. Like, Not the one. So these ones are cherry and almond.
Lovely.
Yes.
What? Ugh, love that shit.
I love
cherries, man.
Well, she uses glacé cherries and mixed peel.
Could you get that in Spain?
Oh, absolutely not. So, this is an absolutely bastardized recipe. I had to go to Lidl in Spain near my sister's flat and we were like, that might be the best bet because, you know, like coming up to Christmas,
German.
They have like, German stuff.
Yeah.
So I managed to get some dried cranberries. That felt nice. Right. And then this bizarre box. Of like there was like some candied orange in there. I'll put a picture on Instagram. There was like a thing of candied orange in there, two glacé cherries, and it was like this clear plastic box, and then just three blocks of fluorescent green jelly, fluorescent orange jelly, and like a fluorescent, I can't even remember what the third color was. It was so bizarre, but it looked like it fit the bill because when I looked at the ingredients, it was all like jellied fruit, basically.
Yeah.
So I just bought that and like a bunch. You were meant to use flaked almonds, but I just bought whole and just kind of like chopped them up. as best I could. And then, yeah, just winged it from there, because a Florentine is a flexible thing, right?
It's, yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's nuts and it's dried fruit and it's a bit of peel. And I was just totally winging it, basically. I was baking them so that my sister could bring them into her school where she teaches. And I was like, yeah, this is a good thing to do at, you know, in bulk. But so they're super simple again. You cream the butter and sugar together just with a wooden spoon. Like, this is the other thing about this book, is like, it's not loads of KitchenAid stuff. You can, most of it is just done by hand.
Oh, great.
It feels very like, yeah, old world medieval. there's no fancy shit in here. Between making your lino cuts, you just like cream the butter and sugar with a wooden spoon. And then you mix everything else through. And you just like spoon the mixture onto the baking sheet, bake them. They spread quite a lot, so you have to space them out because the butter and sugar. And then you just bake them for like 10 minutes. You might need to take them out and like flatten them a little bit if they get like a big old lump in the middle. Mm. And then they bake for a couple more minutes. And then that's it. You let them cool. So then she puts chocolate on them after they've baked. Her hot tip is, when you're melting chocolate, to put a little bit of coconut oil in there as well. And it stops the kind of like white bloom that you get on chocolate sometimes when it's not tempered.
Yeah.
It's literally like a quarter of a teaspoon of coconut oil to 100 grams of dark chocolate. But I thought that was really good.
Yeah.
It works really well. And then she kind of like spoons the chocolate over the back of the Florentines and then does this lovely fork kind of wiggle on the back of the chocolate. And like my Florentines, they felt quite lacy. I think maybe I like them like that, but hers look a bit more compact. And I think maybe what you could do is halfway through the bake push them back in together so that they bake more, but I just quite like them the other way. And so I ended up just like drizzling the dark chocolate over mine, because that spoon thing, when you just spoon them on the back, it just like leaked through to the bottom. So I was like, okay, I won't bother with that. And yeah, that's it. You just leave them to cool then. And so it makes about, this batch makes about 16. But
nice, good size.
Yeah, it depends whether how big you want to make them. I feel like I did one kind of test run before to see how much they spread and then kind of went from there. But they were really, really lovely. And yeah, like I said, I really like Florentines. They keep really well. They keep for like a few days in a sealed box, and they went down really well at my sister's school. So I looked really good.
Yeah.
It was like someone's 50th birthday. The lady whose birthday it was had brought in cake. And then my sister brought these in, but like hadn't realized it was the lady's birthday. And the lady whose birthday it was thought that these biscuits were for her. So she was really touched. And she was like, oh my God. And Rachel was just like, yeah, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
But yeah, I would really recommend these. I think they would be a great gift. You could do them in like little cute bags tied with ribbon and give them to people. And I think they would go down really well. So they were the Florentines.
Love that. Edible gifts. Do you think that this book's good for edible gifts?
I definitely think this book is good for edible gifts. So there's a lot of like, to your point, there's a lot of like marzipan and stuff in here. I feel like you could do with some star-shaped cookie cutters. Festive.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of that. Yeah, there's tons that you could do for edible gifts in here. There's a whole thing. She starts off with like what's it called? Oh, she starts off with salt dough, which is this thing that you make that it doesn't sound edible, but it's like for making tree decorations. But she never explicitly says that it's not edible. So that threw me
I mean, we used to do that at school, and yeah, it's for like decorations. It's great. Like you just lick your hands afterwards and it's like delicious and salty, but it's definitely not edible because it's like mostly salt, right?
Yeah, you're always going around licking your hands.
That's true.
That's the first thing I noticed about you. It's all hand liquor, Victoria.
The pandemic really got to me. I just couldn't. I wasn't allowed to go around licking my hands.
One of the first recipes is this Leb cooking spice mix, which is like cinnamon, ginger, cloves, cardamom, coriander, anise, mace. And then that comes up in the book loads for like various biscuits. And that would be a great thing. You could make the spice mix as a gift, or you could just use it to make the various biscuits that she has. So there's tons.
Love that.
But yeah, no, the last thing that I made was a very, very quick one. And I was just intrigued by it because it sounds great. It's called Christmas fried dough.
Oh my God, this sounds great.
So good.
Festive fried dough. What a dream.
Yeah. So apparently it comes for like something called something that translates to lard pastry. Schmalzgebäck.
Love that.
And yeah, it was dough that was originally fried in lard and or enriched with lard. So it was just a little lard party. And the great thing about this recipe is that you likely have everything in your cupboard. It's literally sunflower oil to fry them in. And it's plain flour, butter, caster sugar, sea salt, vanilla extract, egg, baking powder, and a tablespoon of white wine, sherry, or mead.
I mean, we always have a mead bottle open of mead or white wine or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I could spare a tablespoon.
I could barely spare a tablespoon last night of white wine. But yeah, again, just a really, really simple one. You heat up the oil and then you just mix all the ingredients together for the dough. The dough was really lovely and easy to work with, not like too sticky or anything. Mm-hmm. And then you roll it out into a rectangle on a floured surface and you cut it into rectangles, smaller rectangles. Mm-hmm. And then you do a little slit down the middle, not completely, but just to make like a little letterbox, basically.
Yeah.
And then you're meant to tuck through the dough on itself.
Oh, like a little knot.
Like a little knot, yeah. And some of hers look like hearts. Mine did not. I fucked some of them. And then you just basically...
Hopefully not.
You fry them off until they're golden brown, to flip them over halfway through. They've got a little bit of baking powder in them, so they puff up a little bit. And then you sprinkle them with caster sugar. You drain them on kitchen paper and you sprinkle them with caster sugar.
They sound great. I presume they were donuts when you first said it, like they were going to be like little balls, but that has made me happy.
Yeah, so I think maybe I rolled mine a little too thin because they broke up quite easily when I was flipping them in the pan. But who cares? They were delicious, just little tippets. And it is exactly like a donut in terms of flavor profiles. But it was more like a short crust pastry donut.
Yeah, nice.
And she does say that there's a variation on it where you roll them into little balls and you fry them and sprinkle them in sugar as well. I think they're called snowballs or something. Yeah. Schneeballchen.
They sound great. Do you feel like you could have a little dip with them if you were feeling naughty, like a little Nutella or a little
100%.
I don't know, salted caramel, little something.
Yeah, they give major churros vibes. So I think, yeah. Like, and she says that her kids she likes to eat them while she has like a glass of wine or sherry, but her kids eat them with hot chocolate. So I think they probably dip them in. And yeah, they're just lovely. I think I took one for the team and I tasted one this morning to see how they kept overnight. And they were still good, but like, no, they were definitely at their best when they came out of the pan and they were warm and just coated.
Yeah.
Like a donut, right?
Yeah.
So I think they'd be a great thing to make if people were coming around to just like, yeah, have a little snack on. And you can literally whip them up in like, I want to say like 20 minutes.
Yeah, nice. Really? And they were just like just a little bit of oil, or like do you have to like quite very a deep lot. Fry them?
Yeah, she says to fry them in a litre of sunflower oil. So I don't know what that looks like. So I just did a couple of centimetres in a big pan.
I want this book. I'm going to buy this book today. Well, you tell me, should we buy the book?
I think... yes, a lot of the biscuits and stuff are very traditional. There's a lot of like white pepper biscuits and stuff like that. I don't think this is where you're going to go for any kind of, like I said, trendy ingredients. It's all quite simple, rustic, iced, cute little biscuits. But they're lovely. And there's even those, that fried dough is just super simple. I mean, sure, you could put some cinnamon or something in there, but I guess that's not true to tradition. Mm. Yeah, it's just quite lovely, but not super, super fancy, let's say. Mm. And there was just so much of the savory stuff that I wanted to do. A walnut and camembert wreath, where you make these little walnut rolls around a baked camembert. There was an onion plait and these poppy seed snails and stuff like that. And it's just so much that I would have loved to have made.
Oh, I saw the onion plait when I was browsing it on Amazon or something. You can see like the, and I was like, that sounds great.
Yeah, I was very, very close to making that actually. If I were to rate this out of something, if I were to rate, I find it very hard without you to temper me here, because I'm going to be like, 10 stars out of
5. 10 advents out of 10 I can't say
Lebuchen. I don't know. I feel like I don't have the German, like, you know, the sound down right.
Yeah, which is weird because it's so much like English, but I never learnt German, so.
No. The comedian Dylan Moran from Ireland said that German sounds like a typewriter falling down the stairs, which isn't very complimentary, but it does make me laugh. I would rate this out of quark if I was to rate it out of anything.
Quark?
Yeah. Quark just pops up everywhere in this. And I don't even fully know what quark is.
Is that a cheese?
It is. It's a soft cheese.
It's like a diet cheese, right? I feel like that's when I've heard about quark, whatever it is. Like...
Yeah. It's a type of fresh dairy product made by warming soured milk until the desired amount of curdling is achieved and then straining it. Nice start to the day. It's 9:14 a.m.
Lovely.
I'm ready to pearl.
Well, that's great.
It pops up everywhere, and she's even got like little quark recipes and stuff in there. And yeah, it just pops up as an ingredient in loads of recipes. And I think that would be what I would rate it out of. And if I were to rate, I think I would. It's very hard to dock it any points.
Yeah,
it's very
because it's I think yeah, ingredients are good.
Ingredients
unless you're
good.
In Spain.
Unless you're in Spain, but even then you can find something that works, right? And then usability and accessibility would be good. Veggie friendliness, there's not a sniff of meat in this book.
Even though it's a German cookbook, because I imagine German cooking to be quite meat heavy, but...
Yeah, and it's inspiring. So I think I would have to give it like full marks.
Five quarks
out of five.
Great. That's great.
I love it. I would really recommend it to anyone who is keen on baking and who loves Christmas, because it's just a very, you just get in the mood for Christmas when you're reading it, because it's filled with all of her traditions and you can feel like she really loves it from her like family point of view.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just very wholesome and lovely. I like it a lot.
Is that a nice gift? Would you give it as a gift? It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, I would give it as a gift. But the problem is you probably want to make loads of the stuff in the run up to Christmas. So that's why we're releasing this early in the month, right? Because people might want to just go and like start baking. But yeah, it would be a great gift. So yeah, that was me.
Love it. I'm gonna buy it. I've decided.
Yeah, I think
you've convinced me.
What book did you cook from, Victoria?
So I cooked, this is funny, isn't it?
It is weird.
Doing different books.
Yeah.
So it's a book that I already had, but then when we asked the question on Instagram about people's favorite Christmas book, this came up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people said it. So I have cooked from The Christmas Chronicles by our old pal Nigel Slater.
Nigel. Oh, I'm so interested to hear what you say on this, because I've wanted this book for ages. I feel like every year it comes around and I see it and I'm like, oh
yeah,
this year it looks so beautiful.
Yes, it is beautiful. I'm obviously not going to talk about Nigel Slater because we already talked about him. We've done an episode on his book,
Kitchen Diaries,
part one, glad I remember that. So go back and listen to that one if you want to hear about who Nigel Slater is. And we talk about him quite a lot. We may have mentioned him on, you know, 60-70% of episodes. But so this book, it's very beautiful. I'm going to show it to you. So it's like a grey cover. Oh. It's like A5 and it's got like gold tree trunks on the front.
Yeah. Do you think that publisher is just like, it's a Christmas book, get the gold foil out again, lads. Because it's on mine too.
Yeah. Like, that's how we know it's Christmassy.
Yeah.
And the blurb says on the back, "This is a story of my love for winter. The scent of fir and spruce, ghost stories read with a glass of slow gin and beeswax candles with shadows dancing on the ceiling. With recipes, fables and quick fireside suppers from November to early February, I take you through my essential preparations for Christmas and the new year and everything you need to enjoy the winter months."
Oh God.
And that, frankly, like, I don't need to say any more about it, because that's exactly what the book is like all the way through. His very like evocative personal style of writing, it's a bit like, it feels a bit like sexy, it feels a bit like you know, porny almost at some point.
Him and Nigella are great friends, aren't they? So do you think they just sit around and talk to each other like that? And just be like, oh, Nigel, like, pass the sumptuous chocolate cake for me to savour in my mouth.
On my tongue, where the flavour lingers. Yeah. I mean, I'd hope not. I hope that they just like are like, oh God, pass me the biscuits. Like, I don't think they have a Brummie accent. But what I would hope was they just like drop that whole exterior for this.
Yeah, so
but yeah, so it's a bit, well, it's not like, I don't know if it's like Advent, but it goes through the month. So it starts on the 1st of November and like talks you through the winter.
He loves a chronological book, doesn't he?
Yeah, because he loves his little diaries and stuff. So, I mean, it's nice because it feels like you can get it out on the 1st of November and like you're at that point. And so there's lots and lots of recipes in there, but like there's also lots and lots of personal stories and anecdotes, and there's like whole pages on like picking the right tree and like a Christmas wreath, and like Advent services, and like, you know, it's almost like religious at some points. Like he talks a lot about like going to church, and I guess it's like a traditional thing rather than, you know, talking about the story of Christmas or whatever. But and then that's peppered with different recipes, and then like as you build up to Christmas Day, there is a traditional Christmas menu. Oh, nice. I think he talks about turkey. He also talks about goose, roast potato, you know, the whole shebang.
Yeah.
It's quite good actually that it's chronological, because when he talks about Christmas cake, like that turns up at different points.
Oh, that's clever.
Because obviously that takes a much longer time. And you're adding to it and adding booze and stuff. So that's really lovely.
Have you ever made a Christmas cake?
No, my mom made them a lot. You made them every year growing up, and so like it's quite a fun.
Yeah, it is. I've never made
thing.
One.
No, I've never made one. I don't. Do you like fruitcake?
Yeah. No, not really. Maybe like toasted with butter. But that goes for everything.
Yeah. Can I make it into toast? Is what you're saying.
I might get a toast tattoo.
You should. That would be so cute. Have a little face.
Yeah, you know, just like one of those classic, like, cartoony little like slices of bread.
Well, this is a great transition into my first recipe that I made.
Yes, toast. So,
so yeah, there's everything. Like I don't want to say too much about it. What I will say is that it's like this. Like you could have it next to your bed. Over the winter period and just like pick it up and like read where you are in the winter, because it's like I said, the writing is so beautiful and just so evocative and like so Christmassy, and there's things about like wrapping present, you know, how to wrap present, the pictures are beautiful and things like that. So
I can imagine Nigel like beautifully wrapping your present, like quite like minimal but beautiful,
maybe
with like a handmade label,
exactly, and like no sellotape.
he's
like folding it like Japanese style, like so it all just fits together.
Just tied with some like simple but beautiful twine.
That's it. Right, so I made three things. The first thing I'm going to talk about, I'm not going to talk about it for long because it's honestly like a cop-out. Like it's not, I was like, this is great. I want to eat it, but it's not really a recipe. But like shout out to Nigel. And what we'll say about this book is that a lot of the recipes are like this. Like obviously the Christmas ones are a bit more complicated and, you know, it's a turkey and roasties and whatever. But like the other little ones for like winter nights are very simple and you know, just lovely.
Nigel.
So there's a whole kind of section on different ways kind of with mincemeat, as in the sweet mincemeat for mince pies, and like alternatives to mince pies and other ways you can use that. And spoiler alert, two of my recipes off basically from that sort of section, because I love mincemeat. I love the taste of it, but I don't really like a mince pie because I feel like it's always too pastry-y and not enough mincemeat.
You so just want to eat it by the spoon.
Exactly. Like there's a, I don't know whose recipe it was. I used to make these like mincemeat, like flapjacks, where you just like layer of flapjack, layer of mincemeat, layer of flapjack, bake those up. So good.
Wow.
And actually, our boy Jamie Oliver has a phyllo pastry mince pie recipe, which is great. If you can be bothered to like mess around with phyllo pastry.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So this first thing I made is called a toasted minced meat sandwich.
Oh my God. And we were taking the piss out of Fergus Henderson's mince on toast or whatever it was in the other episode. And now
this is a sweet version of that. Literally. one of my other like Christmassy things I love, and like generally all year round, is like I love a panettone. I love a hot cross bun. They are my vice. I could eat them and die. Like I love them.
There are people who this is their thing, right? This is their sweet thing. Are those kind of like yeasted, like fruity?
I am those people.
Yeah, you are that people. I don't think I knew that about you.
I want to toast it up. I want to put like whatever jam or peanut butter or whatever on top of it. And I want to eat it until I literally cannot move. Like, honestly, I can't buy hot cross buns at Easter because I will just gorge on them. Anyway, so I had to buy a panettone for this. Oh. So I was like, great. I'm going to have some panettone in my house. But basically, literally all it is, right?
Yeah.
Is two big slices of panettone, as in like the like a round.
Right.
2 centimeters, he says, thick. So big ones. And you put mincemeat already I just bought it. I think he does have a recipe for mincemeat in there, but I don't have time for that. Yeah. So I bought mincemeat. You just put that on top of one of the slices, put the other slice on top, and then put it in a pan that's got like 2 tablespoons of butter in it. Oh.
That's so good.
Toast the one side, flip it over, which is much more difficult than it looks because panettone is so soft.
Yeah, yeah.
That so you kind of have to get a plate and flip it, do the other side. It like reduces a lot in size, and then you take it out, let it rest for a second, put like a sprinkle caster sugar over the top and like cut it up like a pizza.
Oh, how good would that be with like what vanilla ice cream as
yes
well?
He says so that good. With cream or any he literally says vanilla ice cream or a jug of cream.
Oh my god, I love that.
He says, we eat it slightly too hot for everyone's lips with vanilla ice cream or a jug of old-fashioned double cream would no doubt hit the spot. Like, honest. Oh, and the picture, gosh. Like, yeah, it was great. Oh, it was good. God. My one regret is that I think my mincemeat was too sweet.
Yes, as is often the case.
I think I bought, like, it was like a brandy and rum one just from M&S, and that made it a bit over-sweet,
which was
a bit sad. So, you know, maybe a bit more, just a calmer mincemeat in future would do it. But I would absolutely make it. It would be such a fun thing to like a Boxing Day thing or, you know, something where you're just like, I just want to eat something ridiculous.
Yeah, and totally.
This is easy.
I love that.
And it hits my spots.
Oh. Yeah. You've reading too much of Nigel's word for it. I was just gonna say, I think that would be a fun, like, if you're having people over for like a pre-Christmas dinner, that would be a really fun dessert.
Yeah,
I like that
exactly
a lot.
And like probably fun for kids as well, because
wow, love it.
Great, really simple, not much to say about it, but you should make it. The second thing I made, also mince pie adjacent,
that name of the week.
Mince pie does me right now is the fig and orange shortbreads.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I also had a bit of an ingredients mess up with this one. Could not find dried figs. So I used dried apricots instead. So it's actually apricot and orange shortbreads.
Well, like my cranberry and almond. Or no, my cherry and almond Florentines were cranberry and weird fruit.
Fluorescent fruit.
Yeah.
Florentines.
So fair.
So these are really fun and interesting. So what you do is you get dried figs, or in my case apricots, and sultanas, and you put them in the blender and make like a paste, like a mincemeat, but you just those two. So it's like a coarse, like kind of thick paste. Mm-hmm. I thought that this had broken my mini chopper.
Oh god, heavens forbid.
It was rough. I was like, I don't know if it's broken. It made a very I felt like I'd blown it up. It was a very like the smell was rough, and I was like, I'm just gonna put you in a cupboard and pray for you, but it's okay. My mother-in-law came the next day and she brought us dinner, which was great, but she has the same mini chopper, and she'd made like a chutney that she needed to just whiz up in it. So she was like, I know you've got the same one, and I was like, oh my god, pray for me that this works, but it works fine.
Okay,
so, don't worry everyone. So you make that little paste, and then you make a shortbread dough, which is fairly simple. It's got golden icing sugar as the sugar.
Ooh, how nice. Could you find that easily?
Yeah. I was surprised. I was like, I'm ready to just get normal icing sugar. But they had it in the shop.
Lovely.
And then so it's butter, golden icing sugar, vanilla extract, ground almonds, You add, and then you add to the dough 80 grams of shelled pistachio nuts, all chopped up.
Ooh, I love pistachios.
Yeah, and a zest of an orange.
Lovely.
So I've got a really lovely picture actually of it all in the bowl, because it just looks colourful and lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really, really easy to just whip up. It turns into a lovely like shortbread dough. And then what you do is you get a spoonful of the mincemeat, the fig and sultanas, and you roll them up into a ball. And then you get some of the shortbread dough and you roll that up into a ball, and you make a hole in the middle, and you put the little mincemeat, the fruit in the middle of the dough, and then roll it up and then squish it a little bit, so it's like a little treasure inside.
Oh, how cute.
Yeah, so you do that. So it says, he says, what does he say? A level tablespoon of the fig paste to make into a ball, and then I think it's like 2 tablespoons of the almond shortbread dough. So it's 2 to 1 basically.
Right, gotcha.
And then you just bake them up for 25 minutes and then let them cool, sift icing sugar, and he puts rose petals on. I put leftover pistachios on top.
Yeah.
What a treat. They were great. They were so fun. Like, they smell amazing.
Yeah.
Because of the, like, the almonds, you've got orange, you've got pistachios. Like, lovely.
All the good flavors.
Yeah. And then, the little fun balls of mincemeat-y dried fruit in the middle were really lovely. I didn't measure that well, like when I was making them, like in terms of the size. So what I would have done is made them a bit smaller. Like, I think my fig balls, apricot balls, were the right size, but I think I put too much dough with all of them, so it was they were a bit more biscuit to, but that is user error, not the recipe error. But they were, and he says they're like a nice alternative to a mince pie. And I think that's right. Like, if you don't really like mince pies or just, you know, they're a nice little biscuit to have around.
Yeah, they still have all the kind of seasonal flavors.
Exactly. And like, pistachios is a nice little addition.
Dreamy.
I would definitely make them again. You could definitely, it wasn't hard. Like, as long as you've got something to chop up the fruits. And like, I use apricots and it was absolutely fine. Tasted absolutely fine, because when I was in the shop and I couldn't find figs, I was like, right, what's an alternative? And it was like apricots, or even like prunes, or dates, you know, like anything kind of sweet and dried. Toothpaste.
Yeah, totally. Oh, how lovely. They'd probably be a good gift as well, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they did look lovely. My in-laws came over the next day and said, oh, they're so nice, what are they? And I sent them away, and you could probably, like, maybe you could warm them up a little bit the next, you know, just pop them in the oven to warm them through. Love them.
Nice.
Shout out to you, Nigel.
Oh, he's so good with baking stuff.
He's so good. And like I say, there's so many different things to use for your, if you want to make mince pie. So he has like a standard mince pie, and then he has mincemeat and mascarpone tarts. That sounds nice.
That sounds great.
Ones with a crumble top.
Yes. I think I've made them before. I love all the variations on mince pies. Yeah, if you don't like mincemeat, sure, you're kind of screwed, but like, there's loads of variations with like puff pastry, or like you said, phyllo pastry, or open stuff, or different shapes.
Yeah, crumbly tops.
Crumbly tops, that's another band name.
Crumbly tops is my band name. Loved it. And so the final thing I made, which almost didn't get made, but luckily I found a key ingredient yesterday, and I was like, I'm gonna make this, is, so this is from his New Year's Eve entry, so the 31st of December, and it's the entry is called Fizz and Focaccia, and it's a cranberry focaccia.
My god, do you think we're both a bit low-key obsessed with focaccia?
Yeah, I think so.
It's just like catnip. Whenever I see it, I'm like, oh, focaccia.
Oh, what are you doing to it? How's yours go?
Yeah.
And it's a real, again, obviously it's very simple. So it sounds like it's going to be kind of sweet, but it's not. It's only the cranberries that are like vaguely sweet. And it's a focaccia recipe. He uses 500 grams of bread flour, yeast, sea salt, only a tablespoon of oil. Like, obviously I put a little bit more in than that. water. You mix that up.
Yeah.
You get it elastic. You leave it to rise for a couple of hours. And then for like the topping, you get 200 grams of small shallots. And I made an error. I felt like I was back at Julia Child of buying quite small shallots, and then you've got to like peel and chop them all.
Is there anything worse?
No.
I'm peeling a little onion. No, thank you.
And then he says he wants you to like peel them, halve them, and then like take all of their layers apart.
Oh, God.
So,
That was intensive.
That was fun.
I think there actually is, on a side note, I think there is something worse than peeling little onion, and that is grating anything. I hate grating stuff. I had to grate tomatoes last weekend for a recipe, and I was just like, I hate this.
Yeah.
I hate it. Your nails are...
I agree. Your nails are bad. There's always one little bit left that you can't quite get unless you're going to bleed.
Yeah. Like... yeah, gross. There's just the margin for, like, you know... an injury or like flesh in your recipe.
Yeah, my lovely nail varnish.
Just hate grating stuff.
Yeah, anyway, I agree.
That's an aside.
What am I saying? Right, shallots.
Yeah.
So you spend 45 minutes chopping a load of shallots and all that stuff. And then you put them in a pan with just some olive oil.
Yeah.
And then you add rosemary chopped up really finely, thyme. Yeah. Like just sprigs of thyme, juniper berries lightly bruised. He uses a pestle.
Wow, fancy. I love this.
Yeah, and then 150 grams of fresh or frozen cranberries. And so cranberries were the thing I was worried about finding, and I couldn't find them fresh, and I love them fresh, but then I found them frozen yesterday, and I was like, I've got to make this because these are here. And I love a cranberry. They're so like tart and lovely.
Yeah.
You mix all the other stuff up in a pan. Like you make the shallots until they kind of like go a bit soft and just go golden. Add all the other stuff. So it's really fragrant. It smells amazing. And then you leave the cranberries right till the last minute and add them in and then take it off the heat.
Ooh.
And then whilst you've been cooking that, you've put your focaccia dough into the pan, which he says a 12 by 24 pan. And I think that's quite small. But it's a 500 grams of flour. Like, it's a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't have a pan that big. So I use actually a square tin that, I don't know, 16 by 16, something like that. And it got very risen and puffy, but that's how we like it, so that's fine.
Yeah, I think that focaccia, you have to gauge what you like, because if it's, we both like quite chunky focaccia, but I don't know, some people like it thin and crispy, and then you want to stretch the crap out of it, basically.
Yeah, and I like it to be like, I like to fill the pan rather than just like, you know, I like it to be a regimented shape, whereas sometimes you put it on just a baking sheet, it doesn't.
Yeah,
it does, I do. The too. Shape doesn't there, and no. I get stressed. so you've left that. So then you pop these on. You top this topping on top, and you leave the oil in the pan that it's cooked in, because that's all lovely and fragrant. Put that on. You leave that then to rise again for like 30 minutes.
Okay.
With all the toppings on, and then you drizzle the oil on it. And get your hands in there to make your focaccia holes.
Yeah.
And then you just bake it for 25 minutes. And it's really nice.
Oh, I want to make that.
I mean, I guess you can make your dough however you want to make your dough, right? Like, it's the topping that's making it. I thought it was a bit... I like an oily focaccia. So I made sure I like oiled the bowl when it was rising and like oiled my pan before I went in. But it could have done with a bit more... maybe oil in the dough and even a bit more salt in the dough, if I'm being honest, but maybe that was me. But then the topping is so nice because you've obviously got these like lovely slow cooked onions, shallots, and then juniper berries, which is not a taste that you have that often. And then cranberries, which are super tart, but then like the really savory, like thyme and rosemary, like it's just like bang on. And like, you can just imagine having it with a glass of champagne. It's just, you'd like tear it off. There's no need to cut it into squares. Like, it's very, very soft, very like terrible. Yeah, it's great.
That makes me, I'm really glad that you made that, because I feel like I'm very inspired by that. That sounds fucking great. You could have a whole seasonal, like, I feel like we should do focaccia of the month, where you pick like something seasonal. It's like, this month it's asparagus focaccia or something. There's so much you can do, and it's always just delicious.
Yeah, because olive oil is delicious.
Yes.
So it was great. Loved it. Loads of stuff in this book that I would make. Everything with mincemeat, because I'm a mincemeat person. A lot of the like recipes, the kind of savory dinners and stuff, I didn't make because they're not very Christmassy, but they're lovely. But like, I've bookmarked like a pork miso and pickled pears. Like, that sounds lovely, not particularly Christmassy. Wow. Yeah. He's got panettone ice cream. Great, hook it up to my veins. He has a whole entry called Panettone, a love story. Yeah, and obviously no one's making, he hasn't got recipe for that. Pickles, pruning, and a baked apple. Right, so he loves a pickle, does he? Nigel Slater. Pickled rhubarb and salmon. He has a lovely looking like fish pie for like Christmas Eve that looks lovely.
Yeah, because that's so much of what Christmas is as well, isn't it? Like thinking about what you can cook in bulk that's, you know, a bit of a crowd pleaser.
When someone stops by that you didn't know that you were going to have, and you don't have to go out and buy a load of stuff. And
what a dream book.
I'd rate out of like word porn, because it's very it's a love letter to winter. He obviously loves winter. He talks about in the intro how he doesn't have any really serious memories of kind of the summer, but he has them of the winter, like, and you hear them all through this book. It's really, at some points it's quite raw. Like, he talks about the anniversary of his mum's death and eating on that day, and like all that stuff. It's really lovely. So but yeah, it's all very written very evocatively and beautifully. So
classic
word porn. And I think it would get 4 marks from me as well, because it's usable and accessible, right? You don't have to make a Christmas cake if you don't want to, but like some of the more simple, you know, you can make a toasted panettone sandwich with mincemeat in the middle. Absolutely. Ingredients, again, it's Nigel Slater. It's all seasonal. It's all, you know, for the UK at least. Aesthetics, beautiful books, got beautiful pictures. So aesthetics gets the win. It is veggie friendly. There's a lot of sweet stuff, but he is good at vegetables anyway. Like, there is meat in there.
It really is.
Like I said, that pork and miso thing, but there's a load of veggie stuff. There's a really lovely looking pumpkin and duca recipe with pomegranates. Nice, and like, I'm very inspired. Like I said, I could have it next to my bed and just read it, whether you're going to cook from it or not. And it's great. So it gets 5 word porns out of 5 for me. So basically we're just head over heels in love with Christmas cooking.
Yeah, but it's something about, you know, it's just so wrapped up in nostalgia and family and stuff, isn't it? Christmas, and like that comes out in everyone's books.
Yeah, and I think that comes out in everyone's, like, just everyone's feeling about Christmas cooking, right?
Yeah.
And like, that's why I was like, I was so interested to hear other people, and I love that, hearing other people's views on Christmas and what they cook and what they, how they feel about it. And I know it can feel quite stressful, like the day of, but I think you put the day of Christmas aside almost, and the turkey, if that's what you eat, and like, you know, all the trimmings, like that, that does can feel stressful, but there's so much more to Christmas food. And I think that that's what people remember.
Yeah. Oh, I just love it. Christmas is food.
Yeah. That's it's the only way.
Speaking of what our lovely followers and listeners sent in, we had some interesting suggestions. We had a lot of people shouting out Christmas Chronicles, like you said, right?
Yeah. So it's definitely worth a buy. Yeah, I'd say get it. You can get it at any point as well, because it goes from November, so you don't have to feel like it's a December thing.
And it's pretty timeless, I imagine. Well, like, that's the thing with all these, right?
Yeah, this came out in 2017, and it doesn't feel like it's aged at all, because Christmas is still Christmas.
And in terms of other kind of shout outs for chefs that people think about around Christmas, there was a lot of Nigella, Delia, Mary Berry, Nigel Slater. I guess I think if you're like thinking, I want to make stuffing, or I want to make turkey or something like that, you're just going to Google like Nigella turkey or something.
Yeah, exactly.
You know she's going to have one.
Yeah, I think that Delia book came up a lot, and it comes up a lot when you look at Christmas stuff. And the good thing about that is that it's all on her website. Every recipe in that book is on her website. So if you want to know how Delia makes gravy or turkey or whatever, like, it's all there for free. You don't need to buy that book. So you can search by that book, which I've forgotten what it's called. It's probably called Delia's Christmas.
How to Christmas.
Yeah.
So good. But then there was also a couple of shout outs for Jamie Oliver's Gravy, which
band name of the week.
Gross. Having a quick look at his Christmas recipe, or his gravy recipe, I think what people might like is that this is like a get ahead gravy that you make like a few days before or even weeks, he says. And then you just reheat it in your turkey tray on the big day.
So stress is this the one saved. I've seen him do a gravy before where he like, where you kind of, you break down a chicken or whatever, and then you cook it in the pan, or you have the bones and the wings and stuff of a chicken, and then you cook that in a pan with whatever else. Is it that one?
I'm sure we just had people say kind of his gravy, and I'm sure he has a couple of recipes, but the one I was looking at is interesting in that it's got 10 chicken wings in it rather than a whole chicken.
Yeah.
And you break them open, which feels a bit violent from a vegetarian point of view, but we'll move on. And you bash them with a rolling pin to help release extra flavor as they cook, and you add them to the tray, and then you kind of cook them with some vegetables, and then you kind of mash everything so you get loads of flavor, and you add some booze and flour, water, and then you kind of pass it through a sieve, and then you obviously keep it. It does look good. It does look like a decent
I feel like tasty recipe. I've seen people make that and do that before, and I guess it's good because chicken wings are cheap, and it's a good way to like you said, make that head, get it in your freezer. Because I feel like gravy is a stressful situation, right? Particularly if you're trying to make it on the day. Like,
so much mediocre gravy out there as well, isn't there?
Yeah. And you just can't please everyone with gravy. No. Like, some people like it, you know, thick, and some people like it with onions in or whatever. And you know.
There was one recipe that you wanted to make that someone recommended as well,
Alison Roman's stuffing, which also could be a band name.
There's a lot of innuendo potential around.
Christmas. It looks so good. That's on the New York Times cooking website. Someone sent that, and I had not seen it before, and it looks great. I almost made it actually for this, but you need to dry out some sourdough, so you have to like leave it out, like you kind of tear it up and leave it out overnight, so it becomes like kind of stale and kind of hard, and you add that in, and it's got like leeks and things like that. Just sounded really nice. You could probably have it as a side, or like a, you know, it doesn't need to be stuffed. I mean, I don't think any stuffing really needs to be stuffed. That's my controversial opinion, because it just cooks at weird times. Like, just have it separately. But that sounded really, really nice. And I guess it's obviously for Thanksgiving, because she's American, rather than Christmas. Yes. But you know, do what you like. Eat it just on a weeknight.
I agree on not stuffing it, because then I can eat it too.
Yes,
I don't
exactly.
Want it out of a carcass. I want it on its in a little tinfoil present.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's fine.
One of our other American suggestions was very interesting, which was for something called potato candy.
Oh,
had you heard of this before?
No, I did. I saw it, but I have not heard of it.
Oh my god! So I looked it up, and essentially, I hope that I'm doing justice to this person's suggestion, but basically you make, like, it seems like it's very traditional, and like maybe you grew up with your grandmother making it or whatever. So you boil some potatoes, and then you let them cool. This is apparently a big thing, and you mash them until there's no lumps remaining.
Okay.
And then you add like butter and sugar, and then
to
this mashed potato. So it essentially makes like a potato dough. Right. I guess not dissimilar to like gnocchi or gnocchi, however you want to say that. I never know. Some people say gnocchi, some people say and then you have this like cool potato dough, and then you instead of using flour to roll it out, you use icing sugar, and then you roll it out and you spread like peanut butter on it, I think.
Oh my god.
And then you
great.
Roll it up. Yeah, and you roll it up, and then you cut it like that. You have to make that noise. And then, that otherwise it's not traditional potato candy. And then so they look like almost like mini slices of Swiss roll or something. So with like peanut butter swirl. So I'm very intrigued by this. I
would absolutely eat that. Like, can I just say that? Yes. Like, is it? I would like to know the texture. Do you put it in the fridge?
Soft. I think it's cold. I mean, I'm answering these questions as if I know, but I don't. I've just read a couple of recipes, but I am also intrigued.
Maybe I'll make this.
Maybe you will. You're going to be making a lot of mashed potatoes soon. Babies love mashed potatoes, man.
I was like, why am I? Tell me more about my mashed potato production line I've got going on.
It was a very random link, to be fair. So yeah, I thought that one was really good. I guess it must be a Christmas thing. don't know.
Yeah, nice. I would eat that because, you know, I like peanut butter and I like potatoes, particularly mashed potatoes. So that sounds great.
But we also should remember that people in the Southern Hemisphere have slightly different traditions. They're not going for the warming.
No.
Carb heavy stuff. Someone in Australia said that watermelon and prawn salad is the way to go.
Wouldn't that be nice? On the beach, is
yeah,
it?
Nice.
In Christmas
is that
morning.
Nice, is it? Lovely, lovely sunny yeah, Christmas
after,
day.
After you've been for a swim, been for a surf.
Cold beer and a barbecue, is it? You absolute bastard.
Yeah. Yeah, enjoy that, lads. Yeah. No, I appreciate that. And what I would like to know is, any listeners in Australia, do your families, like, do you do traditional, like, do you have a traditional Christmas lunch? Like, is anybody, like, you know, is anyone's mom at home, like, making a turkey? Or are you at home making a turkey? Or is that just, like, culturally, am I being culturally insensitive and thinking that the whole world is like me?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe they do, like, that beer can turkey on a barbecue.
Yes.
That would be great. Maybe not.
I love that. For everyone's suggestions, I'm off to make potato candy and Alison Roman's
yeah, I might make that
stuffing.
What are your do your family have any like Christmas food traditions?
I guess it's difficult to like think of them when you're not kind of there, but our biggest one I think is my dad cooks Christmas dinner.
Cute.
Whereas my mom, no, very gender stereotypical gender roles, like cooks generally when we were kids, like cook generally. And but my dad does the whole of Christmas dinner. And I think, and it's great. He's a great cook and it ends up being great. I think it was always a ploy for him to stay out of the way of relatives. So he could just be in the kitchen and drinking and not have to socialize with people
that.
Coming over. I'm sure he won't mind me saying that.
No. I really like that. That was a bit like us at our supper club, though, to be fair. We're like, stay in the kitchen. We love everyone that came, but we were too terrified to talk to people.
Yeah, because everything was terrible. Yeah. Whereas, you know, my mom buys him a new apron every year. And like, aww, you know, it feels very festive. We have biscuits for breakfast. That's a thing. Like, while we're opening presents, we have like a box of biscuits, which we eat, which are...
Wow.
Which feels very traditional at this point. Yeah, and then, like, interestingly, a couple of years ago, so I have a niece now.
Yes.
And she's, you know, three. She was not three then. She was younger. But anyway, so, and obviously you share Christmases when you do that. And we had my niece on Boxing Day, and we didn't want to do two Christmas days. So with my family, Christmas Day proper, we didn't do a Christmas dinner because I was like, I'm not eating two in a row, and also that's really feel stressful. But we had such a fun like adult day. Like, I have a younger brother, so it's like me and my mom and dad and my younger brother, just like we made focaccia and loads of like cured meats and cheeses and, you know, just little bits and pieces, like things that we like loved. My dad got the Alison Roman cookbook and we made different bits from that, and it was just like a fun, you know, it was Christmassy, but it wasn't like a Christmas dinner.
Yeah.
And I imagine we'll do that again, you know, if the Christmas day is delayed a little bit. How about you? What are your traditions?
We like definitely grew up with the traditional Christmas dinner, and my mom is an incredible cook, so did everything and made it look very easy. And in the last few years, because like me and my sisters are kind of all over the world, it's very much like very like it changes now every year what we do and like who does the cooking. So I think like our big traditions are always that we like Christmas Eve is quite we love Christmas Eve as well. Mm. And that's always usually like quite a lot of like little tidbits eat, just like a lovely like spread. I was listening to BBC Radio 1 recently and Jordan North was on there and he was calling it a picky tea, which I quite like. It's really good.
Just all lots of bits that you of stuff that you like that doesn't really go together, but like you want it all. Yeah, yeah, love that.
Exactly that. And then before like lots of kids came into my family, before my sister started having kids, we would like always delay.
It wasn't just like the orphanage broke down the road and they're like
I just can't say things properly today. We would always delay like present opening until after breakfast. So we'd get up, have a really leisurely cup of tea and then make a nice breakfast and then like not maybe open presents till midday or 1 o'clock. And now it's like the kids are up, obviously Santa's coming, they want to like open everything. I think like most of the time we as adults like wait up till a bit after. And then it's just usually just like a late breakfast, maybe like a mince pie and like a hot port in the afternoon.
Yeah, lovely.
And then like something quite traditional in the evening. And then Boxing Day is just like free for all leftovers. We call it Stephen's Day in Ireland. So that was very English of me. I do apologize. My mom always used to make leek and potato soup on Christmas, on Stephen's Day as well, which was really good. But I love Stephen's Day as well because you just get to go and like scavenge all the best.
Yeah, make amazing sandwiches. My family on Boxing Day make chips like from scratch, like deep fry them, and that's like
triple cooked like Heston.
Well, not like Heston, unfortunately. But you know, that's a thing. Like we have chips and then you just have all like your cold cuts and leftovers. Me and my younger brother often make like toasties out of just whatever is left over, like because that shit just bangs.
Because
you've
so
got
good.
Like you've got like all the condiments, like all the mustards and the pickles and the cranberry sauce, you know, everything.
Yeah.
And it's just, love it.
My family are absolute mayonnaise fiends. Like we love Hellmann's full fat mayonnaise. And like when we're doing the Christmas shop, we have to get like 2 mega jars of Hellmann's because we just go through it. Like it's just insane.
You've got to get to Costco and get those like bucket ones at like sandwich shop.
But I feel it would be remiss of me to let a Cookbook Circle episode pass without mentioning Ottolenghi's gingerbread soft biscuit from
Oh my God.
Sweet Book.
This is great though. You brought this to work when we used to go to work. Talk about it because it is good. It's great.
Oh, they're in the sweet cookbook, which I think I've mentioned before. I think I might have mentioned.
You may have mentioned it. Like your favorite cookbook of all time.
I love it so much. But there's the soft gingerbread tiles with rum glaze.
Oh.
And he does them very beautifully with like, he has a cookie stamp and they look gorgeous. But I've just done them with like normal cookie cutters before. And just honestly, one of my favorite biscuits, if not my favorite biscuit ever. They're just like a really soft cookie with loads of spices. They've got like black treacle in there, but also ginger, cinnamon, cloves, some cocoa powder, black pepper. And they're just like really
They are good. And they're soft, which is what you want. Gingerbread can be so hard and like tough to eat. And I remember you bringing those and being like, that's the jam.
They're amazing. I invested in a cookie stamp last Christmas, so I'll be bringing that out again. But they're just so good.
We love Christmas.
We do love
Cookbook
Christmas.
Cookbook Circle.
Where's your cat toy again? A ching, 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 ching. It always just sounds like a slasher movie when you chase it.
My poor cat is probably outside the door like, hey, are we playing?
Let me in. Would love to hear everyone else's Christmas traditions. The weirder the better, actually. It'd be great to hear some really weird shit. Is there anyone who just like wakes up and like, I don't know, makes a pina colada?
I mean, I bet there's so much secret good drinking. There's so much good drinking happens on Christmas. That's the good thing.
Yeah, lots of cocktails. I feel like my family likes to make a cocktail around Christmas.
Yeah. And at like 10 a.m. And especially like when you've got kids and stuff, like it's like 5 a.m. because it's like, well, I've been up for 4 hours anyway.
Might as well drink through this precious family time.
So if you could all pray that my baby comes before Christmas so I can also drink through this through the day. Just joking. Obviously, due to have a baby quite close to Christmas. So
what
I'm hoping...
exact date are you due, Victoria?
All right, well, we don't need to let everyone know my medical records, but it's Christmas Eve.
Yes, thank you. That's why. Santa Durant.
And yeah, little Rudy. So we hope that the baby comes. So my Christmases from now on out are going to involve a birthday and a Christmas in very close succession. So that's fun and exciting. That's so, you know, come back next year to let me know. I'll let you know what the new traditions are.
Christmas Day birthday is not the one, is it? My friend Louise has that and just always gets the one present, and it's not good. People slack.
And I would like a glass of red wine for Christmas. That's my hope. I've already got my dad on the case. He was asking me what exact type I would like, so I feel like he's gonna come through with a great bottle.
Oh, that's so cute.
You know, whenever the baby comes. Anyway,
thank you all for listening
and Merry Christmas.
Happy Christmas! We'll see you next year with our next season.
Season's greetings.
Make sure you ask for all the cookbooks from season... Not all the cookbooks for season one, but you know.
Yeah, definitely not the French Laundry.
The good ones.
Yeah.
That could be on your Christmas list.
Send us pictures of what your cookbook hauls that you get for Christmas.
Yeah, what you cook.
What you cook. If you need any cookbook advice for your friends, presents, we might be able to help. But just let us know.
Give us a brief. We want to hear.
Okay. Right. Merry Christmas.
Love y'all.
Bye. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Cookbook Circle. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. And if you've enjoyed it, please leave us a review as it helps others to find us. You can see how the recipes from this episode turned out on our Instagram @CookbookCircle. And if you make anything from the books we talk about, please don't forget to tag us. See you next time. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.